messenger, teaching the youth about roots and culture, and tell the massive empty member jar. That's all I need when I am. Well, CKUT is a messenger, teaching the youth about roots and culture,
the city, and also through the international broadcast of Radio Al-Hara, Palestinian-led creative online radio broadcasting project that also is based in Bethlehem. So for this interview, I will be featuring a conversation that I had with Christine Francis, who is a printmaker, an art educator, and is very involved in the Just Seeds Artist Cooperative. You can find them at justseeds.org. Christine recently has been helping organize a series of portfolios of images by artists around the world in support of Palestinian freedom and Palestinian human rights. So look that up through justseeds.org. This conversation is about an ongoing street art collaboration that I've been holding with Christine over quite a few years. We've been holding space together and creating street art, often using off-prints from Christine to create lettering messages in support of social movements and calls for justice all around the world. I thought it would be cool to have a moment to share a conversation that is coming from a context of collaboration as part of this series. So here is the conversation with Christine Francis.
So I guess often when we think about how street art interventions happen, maybe there's this vibe that there's a concept and it's executed and people just go out there and sort of assert a project. Our collaborations came from more organic processes, which were like conversations, friendship, experimenting with paper, and a lot of print projects that you had been involved in were like reimagined. Like you'd done all these different prints for exhibitions with animals, and also scrap paper. So yeah, I guess first to start, like I have these memories of like just going and wheat pasting a bunch of screen printed animals up in the city. So yeah, maybe just share a bit about like what you're printing, and then sort of this idea, like how do you feel about this idea of like taking prints and sort of reimagining them in a street art context, like cutting them up, intervening in the city, the sort of experimentation of it.
Yeah, I think I love the like reimagining of the prints and the you know, the misprints and what we consider like I could consider like the leftovers or the like steps in getting to like the final project that I would have exhibited. So yeah, a lot of these prints were, you know, experimental. And then some of them were actual prints that I had made, you know, to wheat paste like years before. It was super interesting to me to have those like come together and have like this new life that you would create with the phrases that you would make, or the compositions that you would make also in the alleyways. And then it was like super interesting as well. You know, cause some of this was, well, most of this was happening during COVID. And it was interesting for me, or like it was cool to see that this was like happening, and then also hearing feedback like from friends who had like come across it was really amazing. They were like, "Oh my God, I think I came across this of yours. Like it was in this alley that I was walking by, you know." And yeah, and just the fact that walking was like such a important thing we were all doing in COVID, just all by ourselves, kind of. Those like compositions that you made, I think, were like really important, especially at that time. Thinking through those things when people were feeling really isolated.
Yeah, there was such a big sense of isolation, and I think walking in the city was so important for a lot of people. So street art interventions in that context, I think were important. The sort of reimagining and remixing of your work in this street art context also, I guess, points to maybe an issue that a lot of people face, like if we're talking about like democratization of art practices, right? Like a lot of people have sort of this barrier between, okay, I have an idea for an art piece, but then like, how do you actually do it, right? Like this comes up a lot in like community art workshops, right? Like how do I express, whether it's like a political expression or like a certain demand or even just an emotion, like how do you express that in an artistic practice? And I think what's interesting in reflecting a bit about this creative practice is it's very much about experimentation, you know what I mean? And yeah, so I'd also, coming from you as an artist who has like found a way to like assert, you know, different projects or have exhibitions, some people look at that and are like, oh, well, how does that really happen, right? So I think it'd be interesting to hear a bit about that sort of, because you talked about like all the experimentation and like misprints that go into arriving at a moment where you're like, okay, this is what I wanted to say. But there's a whole process of getting there. Yeah, so if you have any reflections about that process of getting there and sort of the experimentation involved in that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I go through it like every single time I work on a project. And every single time I'm like, oh my God, this is shit. It's never going to work. Like, oh, like, what if I produce this thing that's just like terrible? And then, you know, I have this kind of moment where things like, I'll like push further and like things kind of come together in a way that I'm happy with. But a lot of the time when I'm working on a project, I have this idea, and of course I don't know what it like is actually going to look like. And so I'm like kind of working through different like visual manifestations of what that could be. And like a lot of times it'll start from a place that like, it's like a very obvious, or like, it's just really cheesy, or it's just like not working. And I'll kind of like move through those, but in print, I usually end up with a lot of misprint paper because I'm usually working through an idea. So, and especially at that time, when I was at Concordia, I was like whipping through so much paper, that I had brought with me. Mostly because I had it was like very cheap, printing paper. But also I was just working through different ideas and I didn't know how I wanted to make them look. And so there were so many with like little marks. And then when I get onto things or something that I think will work, I always make like 5 million of them because I'm like, I'll post those up. I'll like paste them up. I'll make them into something else. So then I end up with an absurd amount of paper sometimes, which is why you ended up with all those like koi wolves and meerkats, because I had also, it feels like once you have the print set up together, it's like, why not print 50? Because you already have the thing, you have the setup ready and you can, so why not?
Respect. Going to the point that you just mentioned about these animals, so koi wolves, meerkats, you're printing all these representations of animals that we don't often see in the city for city-based art. I know that there's some ideas behind that. Can you talk a bit about like how these animals came together? I know that you had like specific reasons that you chose different animals that in terms of their actual practices, like meerkats, for example.
Part of this was like there was that show Meerkat Manor, which like also like highlighted the like social interaction and social structure of meerkats. But I had also done research like independent from that. And they do have like a complex social structure, in which like they have like different jobs, and they sort of like live collectively. They have these like series of interconnected tunnels. But what I was super interested in, or what I was using like image wise in the early 2000s was, they have these like sentinels, which are like the ones that you usually see that the meerkat's like standing up and they like look like their paws are tucked in and they're like looking around. And they are actually like looking, they're the guards that guard against like predators. And then, you know, would warn the rest of the group if predators were around. And I was especially thinking of that as this like watching for danger, but also like just constant vigilance, which really felt like it was needed and important. I mean, always, it's always important, but, you know, in the context of like the war on terror, the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, after 9/11, it just seemed like no one was watching carefully. And so I was sort of using the imagery of the meerkats to talk about that, or to like have this sort of visual representation of someone who's watching.
Building on that point, just because it's super interesting and I want to make sure to just grow that out a bit. So when you're talking about watching at that context, I know that you were mostly in New York after 9/11, working as a printer and various projects you were doing there. What do you mean by watching? And like, I understand from what you're saying, I'm guessing that you're talking about social movements watching the powerful in terms of what they're doing, in terms of passing legislation, in terms of like the attacks on rights of different communities, like after 9/11 became so normalized, a lot of migrant communities. But yeah, I mean, I'm guessing from what you're saying, but yeah, can you draw a bit out what you're talking about like the symbolism of watching and the role that activists play in that?
I was actually in Halifax at the time. I was doing my undergrad at NASCAD. But, I mean, we felt obviously the reverberations of that same crackdown on dissent and any kind of, like, basic rights in Canada as well with the, forget what it was, C-32 or something, C-37, the anti-terrorism bill. But for the watching, yeah, I am really thinking about, like, a critical eye that is critiquing, because it's critiquing, like, and trying to like rein in all of the crazy shit that happened on 9/11 or after 9/11, mostly with the like taking away of rights and just like surveillance state and all of these things that seemed like almost unimaginable before that happened. And it felt like everyone was so wrapped up in this, like fear-mongering, that no one was having a critical, I mean, aside from activists who were, of course, looking at this critically and being like, this is, you know, really, really messed up and it's going to reverberate for who knows how long. So yeah, I was trying to represent, like, it was almost like a warning, you know, like we should be watching, because this is like all around us is danger, mm-hmm. sort of like closing in, but not in the way that they are telling us, you know?
I find that really important in the sense that there's an understanding that, say, for example, coming to a sense that anti-terrorism bills post 9/11 were something to be super engaged with in terms of like campaigning against those bills, like that was very important, right? It seems obvious now, but at the time it wasn't really obvious, right? Like the anti-terrorism legislation was justified by all these you know, discourses around like, oh well, people are facing danger, you know, we want to protect communities, you know, the forces that are being battled are fundamentalist and violent, you know, and some people, like even on the sort of center left, fell into that, right? Like, and I remember there was all these protests planned against like corporate globalization that were canceled, for example, like against the IMF and the World Bank, that they were just canceled because people fell into this sort of rhetoric around safety. And I think one thing that street art always points to is like this fact that social movements and activists actually need to do that work and take that time to experiment with ideas that are not the obvious conclusion that is being asserted by power, right? Like that like these interventions speak to the whole like power of social movements to like think critically and to say things that are outside of the parameters of like established political conversation about a particular point, right? And you know, your street art has and posters and stuff, a lot of Just Seeds artists have often like asserted things that might not be obvious at the moment but become over time, you know, as the social conversation changes, are more normalized, right? Yeah, so I don't know. I'm just building on what you were saying. Like, in that sense, like, do you have any thoughts about, like, the importance of street art in representing that process and how important that process is, like the grassroots critical engagement with ideas that is existing outside of the mainstream paradigm?
Yeah, I mean, I think street art is always important in that way that people... I mean, I still respond way more to... Even to posters and flyers that I do see on the street than on social media. And I know at this time we were like working pre-social media, so maybe it was even more important because people were more attuned to like postering and, you know, graffiti was huge. And street art, like sort of as we know it, like wasn't really a scene in the same way it is now. But I do think it's really important because visually it conveys a message. I think that people do engage with it when it's like on the street in a different level than if it's on their phone or in some sort of like advertising capacity. You know, we're like so saturated with that these days.
Yeah, and definitely I noticed like taking your misprints and like cutting them up, like the ones, or even just scrap paper from your studio and like making slogans around like migrant justice or against funding the police, calling for defunding the police, or solidarity with Palestine, or in support of indigenous land struggles, right? Like people always responded when they see those expressions of like words that articulate these struggles up on the street. Yeah, it's just like a totally different response.
I also think, yeah, in a lot of ways, having them be in paper, the way that you cut them out was so different than, you know, we're used to seeing like graffiti sort of like, you know, either very beautiful or like roughly spray painted slogans. I think there was something like jarring in the best kind of way about seeing these like cut out letters because they're like, they almost reference, you know, stuff you do in like grade school. You know, it has like a kind of like craft and like just like rough edge to it, but like really worked in the way also that it's like, you know, it's paper, so people know it's removable. They're not maybe immediately so angry that there's like you know, graffiti on their building. I just think it hit in a different way, which was like, I was like, yeah, surprised when you started cutting out the words, and then I was like, oh, this is like really working in a way that I can't even really articulate, you know?
Yeah, well, also it's like this idea that we can't respond to the totality of everything all the time, but sometimes like we feel things or we're talking with friends and we have certain responses, and it's good to just say something, but I think for me it was like important. Like also it legitimized saying something, having all this like paper from an artist friend to sort of cut it up and rework with it. It just opened that possibility for me. Like I wouldn't have gotten a bunch of purple and pink paper like randomly. Like I don't know even where to find that. Like I know there's paper stores and stuff, right? But just having that material created an opening to like, oh, well, like, you know, you can experiment, right? Like so that. So it's also like interesting because I think it shows like the community aspect of something, right? Like that, like you're experimenting with something, you have misprints, you pass it on, right? Like there's a trust in that, but there's also like a reimagination of like things don't die, things pass on, right? Like there's an ongoing conversation between community members, both in ideas, but also in materiality, like the things that we do stuff with, right? And this is like the case in that paper, I think. But also beyond that, we had the chance to like collaborate on some specific prints, right? Like there was this struggle that I was trying to, you know, support as much as I could as like a community member around the Immigrant Worker Center of these Ghanaian asylum seekers in Canada whose struggle against deportation was like super undercovered, and like people didn't really and still don't understand that there's like in different contexts, but in this case in West African country Guinea-Conakry, there's all these issues that are forcing people to migrate, economic issues, political repression, all these layers, mining companies stripping land and displacing people, Canadian mining companies specifically. So it was really like great to work with you on that poster, because I also saw from the Ghanaians the fact that there is this poster speaking to what they're trying to talk about from an artist, was really important to them. But yeah, also we worked on that design together. We printed it together. Yeah. Like any thoughts about like the importance of artists trying to like respond to these community demands, why that's important, or also any memories of trying to like come up with that design. I remember that you'd chosen like specific imagery for that poster for specific reasons. And we discussed the colors of that poster for the flag and stuff.
Yeah, that's one of my most favorite posters that I've made. And it was like a super cool challenge. But before I talk about that, I do absolutely think it's important for artists to like work with community. And I mean, a lot of activist artists are out there, and that's what they're doing also for movements, is they're contributing their like visual material that helps like depict what's going on, or like, you know, further movement work, which is, you know, how I like to participate as well. And I know like so many justice artists are doing that all the time, which is wicked and really, really beautiful work that really can like sort of like speak to the issue that then can speak to people in a way that like words sometimes can't, you know, or that words and images together do this like really special thing, for conveying a message, I think. And, but in that poster, yeah, I was trying to respond to the Ghanaian flag. So like the colors from the flag, and then I wanted to represent the struggle, like specifically in Montreal, where a lot of people are located and struggling against, you know, or resisting deportation. But I didn't want it to look super cheesy, you know? So I was trying to think of what represents Montreal, to me, that wasn't, you know, the mountain, the skyline, or whatever, other like thing we may think represents Montreal. And so, yeah, that's how I came up with the stairway, that like iron stairways, which to me is always like a signifier of Montreal and like home, you know? And also like, nice. I didn't think about this at the time, but thinking about those staircases, it is also like a reference to someone's like physical home, which, you know, these people are being forcibly removed from. I wasn't thinking that before, but I'm thinking it now, and it's cooler.
Yeah, well, I think often, you know, a lot of people who'd be very sympathetic to migrant justice issues maybe aren't aware that like Canadian state agents go to people's apartments and physically remove people and put them in trucks and then lock them up and deport them, right? Like, I mean, it might seem obvious to some people reading this or listening to this, but I think that is not explicitly said that much in the media, that like Canadian Border Services, or I believe they might have readapted their name recently, but the enforcement arm of Immigration Canada goes and physically removes people from their homes and by force. So yeah, I think that image of the home is really poignant for many reasons, and that being one of them. Your projects have often involved collaboration. Like we've had the opportunity to collaborate, and that's been awesome. And I know that you've done all sorts of collaborations, and that's pretty like a constant thread in the work of a lot of Just Seeds collective members, but also many other community art institutions or networks also, Just Seeds being more of a network. Can you talk a bit about like the importance of collaboration in your practice and like, and how that happens? Maybe also trusting that process, like not coming to a collaboration like with a fixed idea, but arriving at that exchange as an opening to explore.
Yeah, definitely. I sometimes think that I don't collaborate enough and I want to do more. But when I do collaborate, I usually find it super nice, in the sense that, yeah, I do try to come. It's like less pressure for me because I don't come with a fixed idea. I'm not like, it must be this and it like must be perfect, which is of course like my own shit. And, you know, I'll wrestle that by myself when I'm working, just alone. But when I'm collaborating, it just feels, yeah, it does feel like there's, you know, two or more people come to the table with like an idea or a project that they're trying to make, come together, and then everything changes inevitably from like, I might have one idea coming into it and it always turns out better in the end because someone else's brain brings something way more exciting to the mix. And then the thing that comes out of like a few people working together, I think is far more interesting than what I might come up with by myself. Which is like sort of what I was like getting at as well with your lettering. You know, it's something that I would have never thought of. And who knows, maybe you wouldn't have thought about it in the same way if you didn't have this like weird paper that had all kinds of like textures and color on it. So that kind of like collaborating or like whatever, everything changes once you start collaborating with someone, if you can actually collaborate openly, you know? And even some of the conflicts and struggles that come out are like really fruitful, I think.
Like often within struggles, right, there's debates about how to go forward, and that's sometimes expressed in art. Like if you go to the justseeds.org website, there's all these different prints about different manifestations of like, you know, it's not just about, let's say, Black Lives Matter or stop police brutality. It's about defund the police or abolish the police, right? There's various like layers to that critique of the policing institution. It's just like one issue that's come up a lot throughout the Just Seeds network, for example.
Hi, thanks so much for listening to this exchange. That was me, Stefan Christoph, talking with Christine Francis, who is an artist involved in the Just Seeds Artist Cooperative. And I would encourage you to look up her work and more broadly the work of Just Seeds. And this is a monthly artist interview series that broadcasts on Radio Lhara. We air on the first Friday of each month. That's at radioalhara.net at 9:30 a.m. Eastern or 4:30 p.m. in Palestine. And we also share this interview on CKUT on the third Friday of each month at 11 a.m. That's at 90.3 FM in Montreal. And on the second Tuesday of each month on CJLO, also in Montreal at 1690 a.m., and that's at 1:30 p.m. on the second Tuesday of each month. You can find my archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you next month.
gasping for breath. Just left insane. The song is life like this. Thank you.
afternoon. You're tuned to Butcher T's Noontime Cuts, hitting every Friday from noon to 2, playing your wide variety of music just to make your afternoon delight just right. So stay locked at the CKT 90.3 FM.